From ACB Radio Mainstream, welcome to Tuesday Topics. Over the next hour, we will be discussing a topic of interest to persons who are blind or visually impaired. Now, from Miami, Florida, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Hi there, and welcome to Tuesday Topics. It is a great pleasure to speak with you from a rainy Miami, Florida. It has been raining on and off, it seems more on than off, for the last several days here, sometimes in buckets full. I'd like to, as usual, thank Brian Charlson, who is producer and co-chatter at the moment. We've got a couple of guests that we hope will arrive, but we are nonetheless going to get started. I'd also, of course, like to thank our erstwhile editor, Steve Bauer, who not only records our show every week, but also edits it and turns it into the wonderful program that it is, such as it is. By the time it gets to ACB Radio airing about a week from now, a little less than a week from now, 6 days from now. So, Steve Bauer, we couldn't do it without you, sir. We really do appreciate it. And, of course, to George Byes of Talking Communities, without your software, this program would not happen, sir. So thank you very much for making it available to us. This evening, we had lots of plans for our program, and all of those plans fell through, so we decided to fall back on a topic that ought to be of some importance now, and that is the topic of elections and voting and politics and campaigning, and to a degree, how those campaigns and politics impacts folks who are blind, and particularly how it can. And I think that Brian and I are going to end up kind of going back and forth, with neither of us being the paramount person on this one. So perhaps, Brian, you might start by talking about the first political thing that comes to your mind, and then throw it back to me, perhaps with the topic in mind.
Very good, Paul. One of the things you have to know about anybody who starts talking about politics is where they come from originally. So I'm going to set the stage, if I may, in that respect. I'm originally from Oregon. Oregon has a citizen legislature. That means that it meets every other year and only for about 8 months out of each year. And by that, they then achieve the ability to make sure that all elected officials, at least of the legislative branch, have to have some other means of employment. So it's made up of lawyers and teachers and firemen and businessmen and women, etc., etc. Because I grew up in that environment, in the era of Governor Tom McCall, of Senators Packwood and Hatfield, I got an early introduction to the world of politics in a different kind of fashion than that I found here in Massachusetts when I moved out here. Suffice it to say that eventually I got my political science, BS in political science, I think appropriate two letters associated with that degree, from Willamette University, and I worked for the state of Oregon legislature as the assistant sergeant at arms for 6 years. So I come to it with a bit of politics from that side. My original politics started out in the mainstream, that is, I had friends who were very, very interested in politics from a conservative religious background. I got involved at that time of my life and was elected as a Republican precinct committee person. This is about as low on the political totem pole as one can get and still be elected to office. It's those individuals who establish the political committees within the individual counties, etc., etc. I was that for about 2 years. By that time, I became so disgusted with political machines that I jumped parties from Republican to Democrat, and ran for precinct committee person and was elected and served in that capacity for a couple of years before I once again found myself rather disgusted by the opinions of those who shared that position, that elected position with me. Ran for public office as a member of the board of directors of our local community college that I was attending, was defeated by the incumbent, who also happened to be our state representative from my area. And like I say, eventually got my degree, got some experience working for state and city government, and then moved out here to Massachusetts. So I've been very much involved in politics since day one. In fact, I'm probably the only person in the rehabilitation system who succeeded in getting their rehab counselor to accept governor of the state of Oregon as a vocational goal back in the day. So I very much care about these kinds of issues, and I've changed over the years my political leanings, hopefully not on a whim, but as a result of greater experience and also a greater, more in-depth research into issues that matter to me and to those that I deal with. So the first part of my life was trying to get involved in political campaigns, and I helped in a number of different capacities in my early days, but most of those capacities were the kind that can be filled by absolutely anybody. That is, peeled and sticking addresses onto envelopes, standing with placards at street corners, manning the phones for people calling in and wanting assistance to get a ride to the polling places on election day, those kinds of things. How about you, Paul? How did you first get the political bug?
Yeah, this is actually a good idea. I started out outside of the United States, and it was political from the time that I was in college as well. I ran for and won the presidency of the student body at the University of the West Indies, and that was actually a sort of a bizarre thing to have happened, in that this was soon after Jamaica became independent, and it didn't seem like a very likely thing to have happened. Took part in my share of demonstrations against apartheid and a number of other things, and occasionally got involved with in scrapes with the police. I then moved to Trinidad, where I became a union steward in the teachers' union. I taught high school for 10 years, and I consider union steward really to be a political activity, but that was as much politics as I did then. And for quite a while, when I came back to the States, I didn't get politically active, though I voted at every election. One of the reasons that I didn't is I was really disgusted with the way that both parties were dealing with disability issues, or rather, perhaps more accurately, were not dealing with disability issues. And I was one of the people, I think, who was impacted a lot by some of the initial politics leading up to the passage of the ADA. I was very impressed with Justin Dart and his call to political action on the part of people with disabilities, and ended up becoming the vice chair of one of the first, I think, disability caucuses in the Democratic Party at the state level. We actually formed a disability caucus which operated for 6 or 7 years, and in 1992 we took part in the state Democratic convention. Then that was, of course, very early in the career of William Jefferson Clinton and his wife, and Hillary actually spent a good deal of time with us, so we actually got to know her better than we did Bill Clinton. But forming a disability caucus in a state is an extremely appropriate kind of way to go to get your issues out there. We were fortunate to get a lot of our issues actually onto our party platform at the state level that year, and even got some of them onto the national platform. As time went on, I guess I became less enamored of politics in Florida, and I think work and ACB kind of accounted to a degree for that, because relatively soon after that I became president of ACB, and there were just some things that had to go, and the Democratic caucus in Florida was one of the things that got jettisoned in order to be able to do what I had to as president of ACB Plus, trying to do a job. I continue to be a registered Democrat. There are times when I've been tempted to change. I am one of those people who actually believes that Bill Clinton was a pretty good president. I am one of those people who is categorically convinced that Nixon, Reagan, Bush, and Bush will not be high on my hit parade of presidents. And I've been somewhat active in the Obama campaign and am a part of a speaker's bureau in a different kind of a campaign for this election. We are trying to pass an amendment this year that will allow us to seek funding for the community college at the local level. And I'm a part of the Speaker's Bureau for that, and I've gone out looking for endorsements. So that's kind of where I come from politically. So back to you, Mr. Bryan.
So the next thing I think of when I think about politics, the electoral process, et cetera, is how I get information that allows me to have the opinions that I have. And certainly I turn to resources such as books from the Braille and Talking Book Library, a combination of biographies of political leaders. During the Democrat primary process, I read the published books of Hillary Clinton and the published books of Barack Obama in order to help educate myself as to which of the two I was going to support for office. So I do a bit of research in that respect. I also spend some time reading periodicals, newspapers from around the country. I'm less interested, in all honesty, with the editorial page than I am with the hard news, so to speak, that I find there. Reporting on the actual words of people rather than somebody's opinions of what the words should cause me to think. You can tell that I'm not at all enamored of the debate, and now let's explain to you what took place during that speech or debate and why you as a member of the voting public should feel a particular way. I don't care much for that kind of approach, so I don't spend much time there. But nonetheless, I do read newspapers quite a bit, and our household definitely has CNN, and the news station is the primary things to listen to during dinner, during getting ready in the morning, that kind of thing. So that's how I've educated myself and continue to educate myself about this thing called politics and the electoral process. I tend to be a liberal, though not exclusively so. I would certainly not succeed in passing anybody's litmus test for the absolute core values of a liberal versus a conservative. On the other hand, on issues associated with disabilities, clearly I am a liberal in that respect. I do, however, think that there's a problem with the balance that we get between entitlement programs and programs that an individual needs to engage in and work to keep some aspect in. So that's my political background. Now, I've been involved with ACB for years and years on virtually every level. It was a great place for me to learn what it was like to actually be in positions, elected positions of authority, and to take that responsibility seriously, and to, as a result, look at other elected officials and look for a particular type of character in them when I vote for them, not just issues-based, though clearly that's part of what I look for, but as much character-based. And in spite of that, I agree with you, Paul, that I think that William Clinton was an excellent president, one of the best during the time that I've had a right to vote. Not necessarily morally what I want him to be in all respects, but certainly with respect to the tasks he performed as president, I think that he did what I would want a president to do, and he came to his conclusions in a way that I'd want a president to come to their conclusions. All that being said, I do mix how I make my decisions on about a 50-50 mix between issues of disability. If I don't care about issues of disability, who's going to? And fundamental issues of on things such as the military, issues of citizenship, issues of stewardship over the infrastructure of our collective society, things like maintenance of roads and bridges, those kinds of things, funding of school systems, that kind of stuff. So it's about a 50-50 mix for me between these two types of topics, disability specific 50% and non-disability specific 50%. Your turn, Paul.
Let me talk a little bit about how I get my political opinions, because they're a little different than you. I actually do enjoy looking at magazines. I'm sort of with you. I'm not so much an editorial reader. This year, I've looked at The Nation and National Review, at The Atlantic Monthly and Harper's, and I've also spent quite a lot of time playing tag between coverage of a given event by CNN and by the Fox News Channel. I certainly grew up or felt over the past few years that there was a fundamental difference between the kind of viewpoint of, say, the Fox News Channel and MSNBC, but I've actually found that the differences between the two channels, at least in this year's political debates, haven't been nearly as great as I would have expected them to be. And some of the coverage on both has actually been interesting. The other thing that I like to do a lot is to keep in touch with how we are perceived outside of this country. So I spend a lot of time with the BBC, both the World Service and the domestic networks of the BBC. And also tend to be a fairly religious reader of The Economist. We actually just got a text message of from one of our participants, and she asked us the question, don't we feel that the Republicans kind of set Clinton up and had a lot to do with the way that his presidency turned out? And the answer is that I absolutely agree with you, Sheila. We do have some other folks with us, and I would be interested in knowing whether other people actually acquire their information about politics in some other ways than those that Brian and I have talked about. So if anybody who is out there has some other and perhaps more novel ways of acquiring political information, jump in and talk to us.
Hello, everybody. This is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. I think that a lot of people, political point of view, a lot of times I think goes by how they've been raised and things like that. I mean, sometimes I think that people maybe change over time and decide to find another point of view. But I think I was raised more conservatively, and I tend to vote that way. But I can see where, like, blind people tend to be more liberal because of the programs and such. I didn't know about it until I read something about Helen Keller. She was an avowed socialist back in the days, before the 20s, I guess, when she'd written a lot of things. But I tend to vote a certain way, sometimes more conservative. But I think Bill Clinton was a good president. I think he did get into a lot of trouble when he was in. But although, you know, now with the Bushes, the ADA came into being when the first George Bush was president. So I suppose that could be something to be said of that. But I've tended to vote more independently. I vote for the person more than I do the party, I think, a lot of times. But although I've tended to vote one way more than the other, but I think that's way. I believe that's the way it goes.
Thanks, Gary. Anybody else want to jump in on how, on unusual ways of acquiring political information?
Hi, this is Bob Hache, and I do use some of the same methods that you guys use, newspapers, magazines, U.S. News World Report, and also TV and some radio news. But a newer thing that I've gotten into, and it's actually come to me via Charlie Crawford's Blind Democracy list, and that is some rather progressive and somewhat left-wing points of view that come from places like Alternet and Democracy for America. And so I find that that is the mix, and I am quite liberal. I've gotten more that way over the last 8 years. I was headed in that direction, I suppose, when I was younger, although I have voted for a few Republicans in my day. I had made it a point not to register for either party, preferring to be an independent, until I got more and more disgusted with our current president. And 6 years ago, I did register as a Democrat, although I'm not happy with some of the Democratic leaders for attempting to bail out the wealthy speculators in our latest go-round here.
Good evening, Dave McElroy here, Visalia, California. I certainly read a lot online, a lot of newspapers, a lot of other information. What I tend to do, I tend to get a lot of my political information from financial sites. It came to pass a couple of years ago that I have acquired a small amount of money, which I'm adding to on a monthly basis, that I invest in. And I've, like most investors, took quite a bath over this last week or so. Trust me, I haven't even looked at my my financial statement. But I tend to stay away from disability-related sites when I look for my political information, because, well, because we are people first and disabled second, in my opinion. This being the case, I consider myself, I tend to be politically, I suspect I would have to say I'm a bit right of center, in that I tend not to believe that we all have a right to everything anybody can hand us. On the other hand, I think we have a right to equal opportunity, and that, of course, we don't have. So there you go. But generally speaking, I try to get viewpoints from all sides of the political spectrum, and then make my choices from that. I actually remember hearing a guy, is it Turkish? No, he was an Armenian, I'm sorry. An Armenian Turk. And what he told me was, he said, I forgot how many languages this man spoke, but he said, and I've never forgotten this, he said, you always need to speak the other person's language, because you need to know what your enemy is saying and what your enemy is thinking and what your enemy is doing. And I've always carried that with me. You know, you need to know what everybody is saying, thinking, and doing, and then you can make a rational decision.
I think a couple of people raised some good points, and we should probably at least mention two other sources of information. I've certainly used one of them, and occasionally used the other. Let me talk about the occasional one first, and that is probably new to this election year. I think they were beginning to be around in 2006, but they've really only come into their own, I think, this year, and those are blogs, and they are everywhere, and they are at every side of the political spectrum. And also, bizarrely enough, or at least it seems bizarre to me, on virtually every journalist site. I am not sure that I love the idea of people who claim to be delivering news at the very same moment writing on blogs. It somehow leads me to believe that the news is that I'm dealing with is a little suspect. I think if I were a news broadcaster, I would probably not be blogging. But that's just me. The other way that, of course, one should acquire information every 4 years is on political party platforms. And I took a look at both the Democratic and the Republican one, as well as at the campaign pages of Barack Obama and Senator McCain, and I took a pretty hard look at their disability positions for the most part. I will not claim to you that I've read all of the Democratic and Republican platforms. I felt that both platforms were a little disappointing in terms of disability issues. Certainly the Obama campaign seems to have more information available on relevant disability issues, but unless it's changed in the last 2 weeks or so, neither of the candidates, I think, had the word blind on their web pages. So they were into the mainstream disability issues, but for the most part had not taken positions on blindness-related issues. So those are probably some of the ways that we acquire information, and you guys now know something about what Brian and I have done to get involved.
From ACB Radio Mainstream, you are listening to Tuesday Topics. If you have comments about the show or a suggestion of a topic you would like to have discussed, send a message to TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. That's TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. Once again, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Let's talk about some other elements of elections then. I'm going to change direction on us here. Let's talk about voting and voting machines and some of the developments that have occurred in this election. I know that Florida has been interesting, but perhaps before I talk about what's happened in Florida and the dilemma of people with disabilities in this state, has anything interesting been going on in Massachusetts, Mr. Charlson or Mr. Hache?
Well, I think finally now every city and town has the auto mark, and I'm kind of happy that we do. I've actually gotten a chance to sit down with some of the sort of paper trail folks, and they really have convinced me that a computer is, obviously any system is riggable, but I have been convinced that a computer is a little bit more riggable than, let's say, some of the older traditional paper system. So I am glad that we have both an accessible and a paper trail option here. And what I'd like to say to everybody, and especially to folks out there listening on ACB Radio, is that if you've had any problems using accessible equipment, or even if you haven't used it before, and you're going to be using it for the first time, I would get in touch with your city, town, or clerk and ask them if you can help them with their poll worker training. Because this stuff is only going to work as well as the poll workers know how to use it. And there's been a wide variability in how that works. Places like Watertown and Waltham, where Brian and I live, are pretty progressive. They train their people. Things tend to go well. There are other communities here where that has not necessarily been the case. And the best remedy for that one is for blind people to get out there and participate in the training. Show the poll worker, A, what the machine means to you, and B, how relatively easy it is to use, so that they're not intimidated by the things. And hopefully you will have a city or town clerk who is progressive. That's another part of the problem. Some of the city and town clerks do this very grudgingly. Some of them, like here in Waltham, give all of the polling places a cell phone number that says, if a machine breaks down, you give me a call and I'll bring one of your spares, so that people will have the opportunity to vote accessibly.
Those are all extremely good points, Bob, and thank you very much. We just got a text message from Sheila in Orlando who says that she tried to vote in the primary election using a machine and it didn't work, and she ended up having to vote with a paper ballot, and she wasn't happy, and that she did let her elections office know about that. But Sheila is typical of what's going on in Florida, which is an extremely bizarre situation. Last year in Florida, it was decided that we could no longer trust those dastardly computerized machines without a paper trail, and it was mandated that every county in Florida by this election be prepared to offer a paper trail. and virtually every one of them went to a scanning process that of course involves your marking a ballot and then running it through a machine and then inserting that ballot into a ballot box. The only difference with that scenario in Florida from the scenario that went on in most other states was that it was decided that even though we had to abandon all of these old machines because they were unreliable and couldn't be trusted, disabled people should vote on them. So now we have the absolutely atrocious situation of disabled people essentially being relegated to machines which have been declared untrustworthy by the political system. And more importantly, and perhaps more relevantly, all of the emphasis of the counties is on training their voters on how to use the new machines. So we in my county have actually filed phenomenal protests with the Department of Elections, objecting to the fact that in trainings that they go out to give, they don't even take the disability machines, and that in all of the ads that they've done so far, at least, they've made no mention of the disability machines, how they should be used, and that they will be available in every precinct. And even in some very large trainings that have happened at Miami-Dade College, when they've shown videos and they've brought machines, they have not so far, though I hope that will change at the next meeting, because I've been pretty forceful and I hope it'll have some impact. But it's very sad for me that that people with disabilities have essentially been shoved aside by the state system. Sheila's just texted that she's not sure that the disability vote will in fact be counted right, and all they're trying to do is pacify us and make us shut up. And she could well be right. So that's what's going on in Florida. Mr. McElroy, anything on the California front worthy of sharing with us?
Well, first of all, I wish that everyone would adopt the system that Bob Hache talked about, the AutoMark. I think that would resolve a lot of concerns with a lot of people. You would have your paper ballot, you would have a verifiable trail, and you would not necessarily have a computer that could be hacked. But alas, California, I don't know that they're even I don't know if they're even certified in California. We in Tulare County, bear in mind, we live in a small, our county is one of the smaller areas of California, at least population-wise. We have what are called the Sequoia voting system machine, and the machine itself isn't bad, although last time we went to vote, the polling worker didn't really know how to use it, however, they did offer that we could just do a standard ballot, and I agreed to that, as did Pam, because I felt, well, at least our vote would be counted. Now, with all of this that you're describing, you know, I don't have any assurance that our votes are actually going to be counted. And that's a problem. I don't have a good solution to this, but I'd like to see a more equitable solution that everybody could live with. And I don't know that that's going to come very soon.
Thanks, Dave. The AutoMark is in fact certified in Florida, and one of the things that is sad is there's actually HAVA money for those listeners who may not know what HAVA is. It stands for the Help America Vote Act, and it represents funds that were allocated to the states to make changes, and our Secretary of State and Department of Elections at the state level simply decided they weren't going to make any of the money available to counties to purchase AutoMarks, and instead they were going to use it for their operations through the year 2023. Brian, we've talked about machines and we've talked about other stuff. Voter registration is a topic that I think probably deserves some attention. We're running out of time, And in fact, in most jurisdictions, you probably have just a few days to get registered. Could you talk a little, Brian, perhaps about some of the ways that blind people can work on getting registered to vote? Is it hard for blind people to get registered, or are there some ways that there are that make it relatively easy?
Well, it's the same as for those who have sight. That is, you can go to your town hall and pick up a registration form and register. You can, at typically your Department of Motor Vehicles or whatever name it goes under, here in Massachusetts they call it the registry. Basically, entities that deal with issues of serving persons with disabilities have an extra responsibility to see to it that they've had an opportunity to register to vote. So here in Massachusetts, for example, whenever you're seen by a counselor for the first time signing up for services from our state agency, they include in the materials they bring with them a voter registration form to assist you in filling that out. Of course, it doesn't rise to the level of giving you any privacy, any assurance that things have been done properly until you show up at the polling place and you give them your address and they indicate to you that you are or are not on the roll, because you can't fill it out independently and verifiably, and those two things that are part of the whole process of registering to vote. Our agency that I work for, the Carroll Center for the Blind, certainly has voter registration forms, which we put in the hands of our clients, giving them the opportunity to register while at the agency. They're not put under any pressure to do so. It's clearly made an option, and we do not get involved in any way, shape, or form of discussing politics, partisan or otherwise. But we do feel a responsibility to see to it that they have access to that registration process.
It's actually been very interesting this year because voter registration has occurred in this country at absolutely unheard of levels. And that's largely, I think, because of the kind of political campaign that's been run, particularly by the Obama campaign, but also to a degree, I think, by the McCain campaign. And the American public is, it appears anyway, pretty energized by this election. And there really has been a massive movement to go out and register voters. We at the community colleges in Florida are required to do that. So whenever a student with disabilities arrives at our door, we always ask if he is a registered voter, and we'll help him to complete forms, and have gone through training for voter registration. But I think the other point that I would make is, if you call around a little in your community, you will generally be able to find someone who will help you to get registered to vote if you want to. The disability vote has actually been pretty important in the last several elections. There are those, in fact, who've argued that the 2004 election was won by the disability vote. The disability vote was, in my opinion, in 2004, very surprising, in that something over 50% of people with disabilities voted for the Bush ticket. It was surprising to me, given the tenor of most disability folks in the past, so it was somewhat surprising. We'll have to see whether that happens this year as well. So voter registration is something that everybody should certainly consider, because I think regardless of how you choose to vote in this election, it's clear that this election is going to make a huge difference in the direction that we go. And I think that we're not only here talking about the presidential race, but also about the congressional races, which could have a huge impact on the way that we go. Now, it's interesting because in Florida, there is no real way that ballot information can be gotten by voters who are blind, for example, except by going online and looking at the ballot information there. I had occasion to check our local elections department's website, and much of the information is pretty accessible, which is a good thing. But in some other states, there actually is a pretty substantial effort to make ballot information available to blind people in some other ways. Brian, I know Massachusetts does, but tell our listeners something about what the approach that's taken in Massachusetts is.
Here in Massachusetts, any of the individuals who utilize the services of the Braille and Talking Book Library can include in their profile that they would be interested in voting information. The Secretary of State's office has provided an early print copy of the voter information pamphlet, and the library has recorded it and distributed to all those of in interest in it. This year, things are a little different. For the first time, the Secretary of State's office is going through the same process. We are actually engaging the appropriate office in having the responsibility to see to it that it comes to us in accessible form, rather than something that's done as a matter of a public service by a private not-for-profit.
That's excellent. It's really a good thing, and I'm surprised that more talking book libraries aren't actually making an effort to assure that their stuff is accessible. The good news is, at least insofar as I've been able to establish it, both of the parties' websites are fairly accessible, and much of the material that's available on those websites is actually quite readable. We did go through something of a snafu earlier in the year, in that both parties streamed their conventions on their websites and also put a good deal of audiovisual material up on their websites, and both political parties used Silverlight. For any of you who are baseball enthusiasts, you will know that Silverlight is in fact a new Microsoft, I guess you'd call it a media player, that in fact is sort of usable by blind folks, but is not very well controllable, in that none of the controls for volume and other things are accessible in any way that I or anybody else that I know has been able to establish. So the fact that the political parties in fact used an AV approach that was inaccessible to folks who are blind and visually impaired was the only black mark that I know of against the political parties this year. They've certainly done a good job of being sure that disability issues are on their websites and that they are covered. I think it was interesting that ACB co-hosted a meeting on disability issues at each of the conventions, at the Democratic Convention in Denver, where Jeff Tom represented ACB, and at the Republican Convention in Minnesota, where we were represented by Eric Bridges. I think this is a huge step forward and certainly bespeaks our connection with both political parties. Brian, have you noticed anything good, bad, or indifferent about the political party materials or coverage this year, aside from those things that I've talked about?
No, I'm just generally pleased that while they may not have been intentional on their part, things are relatively accessible, the Silverlight being the exception to that. And again, any entity could have made that error. That was not an error of commission, but rather an error of omission. Nobody thought to ask, would utilizing that player create a problem for us? Certainly MLB didn't ask, and it was only part of the way into the season before they corrected their problem. So it doesn't surprise me that the political parties, who are not by any means aficionados of things accessible on the net, each one of the parties that I've spoken with in terms of getting information emailed to me. It came to me in accessible formats. Occasionally something will come to me in PDF format, but it's not the image type of PDF. Rather, it's a true document, and my player can access, or not player, but my Internet Explorer and or my Adobe Acrobat Reader can access everything that's been sent to me. When things get a little complicated in their format, things become harder to read, but that's true for virtually any complicated document, no matter what its original format. I think, to be honest with you, while I am very interested in the presidential campaign, I'm probably more interested in the relationships I've been able to build this year with local campaigns for the State House, the State Senate, those kinds of things. I've also been fascinated to see what impact there being a blind governor of the state of New York and blind candidates for Congress has had on even local politicians who follow these kinds of things and mention to me whenever I have conversations with them about how pleased they are to find that persons who happen to be blind are having some success in the political arena.
And I hope that the blind candidates win their elections. That would be good. Paul, it seems like I read somewhere from an email about the campaigns of Obama and McCain, and they were saying something about some of the positive things that Obama was saying. This guy was supposed to have been unbiased, but it sounded like he was saying that that McCain's side, he voted against everything we wanted and things like that, or he was just sort of, I don't know if he was indifferent to us or he just voted against everything, but Obama seemed to be for us, though.
Well, I think there are lots of emails that occasionally find their way onto lists that we need to read pretty carefully. I think that anyone can certainly look at Senator McCain's record. One of the most recent things that he did was to introduce a bill that I don't think anything will happen with this year, but that actually restores the linkage of blind people and Social Security, and I think that certainly bespeaks some involvement and interest with people with disabilities. He's not someone I would regard as unfriendly to people with disabilities or as someone who has set himself up as a partisan of measures that detract from the effectiveness of people with disabilities. But I would urge you to take a look at his page and at his disability platform to at least get an idea of the kinds of things that he's thinking about. I think there is a qualitative difference between the platforms that you'll or the campaign statements that you'll find on the Obama page and those that you'll find on the McCain page. I think it is worth saying that the only person to mention disability that I heard among the four candidates for president or vice president was Sarah Palin from the Republican Party, who has a disabled child, who indicates that she is going to truly be an advocate for people with disabilities once she gets to Washington, as she puts it. I guess the last question that we might try to deal with this week as a go-round, and perhaps we'll get to continue some of this next week, talking about campaigning and getting involved, but perhaps the last thing that we can talk about is early voting versus polling place voting. Do people have strong feelings about that?
Well, I think that might be something that's up to the individual, whether they want to. If people use the auto mark, which I thought maybe most places did, I think Michigan does, but I think that people should be allowed to use that any time before Election Day if they wish. But also, if they so choose, if people want to do absentee voting, then they have a perfect right to vote on before then. I've done that. So I guess it sort of depends on the individual. I think it's probably quite all right to vote early if people want to.
For me, I've always made a point of going to the polling place and going through the polling process on election day. The only time I've done an absentee ballot is when I truly wasn't in town for the day of the election and wanted to make sure that I had cast my vote. The reason I make a point of going to the polling place is because I think there's value in my fellow citizens seeing me stand in line, going through the process of voting and putting that ballot into the final ballot box. I meet my friends and neighbors doing that. They see that a blind person is as engaged as a taxpayer, as a voting member of society, as any other class of individual. And I think it might heighten their awareness, my just being there. Now, I do a number of things like that in my daily life. There are times when people have offered me assistance, and even though I wasn't in the mood or in the need to accept that assistance, I accepted it anyway, thinking that I was setting the stage for the next blind person who might be offered assistance by that individual to make sure that I haven't, if you will, salted the well, and that individual is not going to offer in fear that they're going to get snapped at. I feel that there's a value in blind people being seen actually voting.
Brian, this is Dave McElroy again, and I have to agree with you wholeheartedly. Pam and I certainly have done that, and it sometimes at some difficulty because the polling places change. But I know that for a long time we had polling for several years. We got the newspaper out the first time we had the Sequoia voting, and then for the next several years. One or two of which we were actually out of town, and we went back, and the people said, "Oh, we wondered where you were last year. You didn't show up." Well, we voted, so they do know that we're there, Brian, and I think that is an absolutely valid point. We do our best to do that. I know Pam was vehemently opposed to voting at all until we got. Other than absentee, until we got private voting capability. But I think you're right. I think we need to be seen. And of course, anybody who has been around Visalia long enough knows Pam and I, for good or ill. We got pedestrian signals in here and other stuff like that. So it's not like we're not active in the community. But that's voting is certainly one aspect of that community activity, and I think it's a valid one.
Sheila from Orlando has texted that you can do that with early voting too, because you do stand in line at a polling place and you vote using the same machine and you do exercise a private ballot. And of course, she's absolutely correct. Early voting is not the same as absentee voting, and that's really one of the reasons why I raised the question. Early voting is often not as crowded and not as chaotic, and it might be easier for people who are blind to get more assistance if they actually do vote early. But I do think that one of the issues that surrounds the polling place is the one that Brian raised. The other is, and I guess this applies more to absentee ballot than to other, if blind people don't choose to exercise the option of voting privately and independently, eventually someone is going to raise the question of why we should bother to make machines available if folks who are blind aren't going to use them. So I hope that if there is still time, people will at least consider either early voting or voting at the polling place rather than using an absentee ballot. I think once you do it for the first time, you'll be hooked, because I absolutely believe that there is nothing that was more satisfying to me than the first time that I actually was able to vote privately and independently and know that all of the choices that I was making were mine, and that not another person in the whole world knew how I had voted unless I chose to tell them. For me, that was a pretty powerful thought. Let's go around once more very quickly and see if anybody has a final thought on the whole electoral process as we wind this evening's program down.
My last comment on all of this is going back to the governor of the state of New York and congressional candidates running in New Jersey and I think Minnesota, or was it North Dakota? I don't remember one of those states, who are themselves blind or visually impaired. I'm really pleased when people take the chance to get out there and run for office, whether they're a family member, a member of the same congregation, a church, or a person, a fellow person with a disability. But there's something about it being a person with a disability that rings my chime more than all the others. That is because they're taking a real chance. They're having not only to convince the voting public that the views that they espouse are the ones that the public wants to vote for in the form of a candidate, but also that they, as a person with a disability, are capable of functioning as an elected official.
It is Mr. Peterson in the great state of North Dakota who is the blind person and in fact officer in a North Dakota chapter and an active member of the National ACB who is in fact running as a state representative in the great state of North Dakota. I think the last thought that I would have is a retrospective one, and that is to say that compared to the information that any of us as blind people had at our disposal 20 years ago, our capacity now to acquire good, meaningful political information, our capacity to get to and use accessible voting machines, and our capacity to fully participate as citizens in the democratic process has never been as easy or as immense as it is now. We truly do have the ability to get any information that we truly need to make good decisions about how we want to vote, and we truly do, in most places, have a means for voting that will allow us to do it privately and independently. We have no excuses for not letting our voices be heard. No matter how you propose to vote in November, it is my fervent hope, and I suspect the fervent hope of everyone who's participating with me tonight on this program, that all of you will exercise your right as Americans to cast your ballot. And if Tuesday Topics is on the ballot, please vote for us. Join us next week when we will actually continue our political discussion with an in-depth look at how you can get involved in campaigns. And our guest will be Chris Gray, and we hope some other folks who have maybe gotten involved in some other campaigns, and perhaps we'll even see if we can get some of the blind candidates to join us. Perhaps Mr. Peterson from North Dakota will deign to come on with us if he can find the time. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your participation and for listening. Remember, a democracy essentially depends on those who are part of it, and members of a democracy get the government they deserve. If you don't vote, know that the government you will get may well be what you deserve.
And that's Tuesday Topics for this week. To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's 2 hours universal on Wednesday. The program is conducted in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. That's ourplace.acbradio.org. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each program begins, those who are online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer any questions you may have about the chatroom client. An announcement about the show, including the topic to be discussed, will be sent out early each week to the ACB Radio Friends List. If you have comments about the show or a suggestion of a topic you would like to have discussed, send a message to TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. That's TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. So we hope you will come and join us each week on Tuesday when Tuesday Topics is recorded. We'll look for you in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. Tuesday Topics is a production of ACB Radio Mainstream.
Our future is in your hands. Please vote on November 4th.